It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hi again, Pacer fans. It's Scott Agnes. Here's a reminder to read all my work at fieldhousefiles.com and that I am going live on YouTube after every Pacers playoff game. Now, here's the show following the Pacers' Game 2 loss in New York at Madison Square Garden with Game 3 on Friday at Gamebridge Fieldhouse at 7 p.m. And it's another gold out. All fans in attendance will receive a gold t-shirt with Boom Baby on the front. And I am live. Welcome into the Fieldhouse Files, Pacers live post-game show. And I can see a lot of you are heated a little bit, fired up here, with dozens of you already here in the chat. Appreciate those that have been in here. Some of you are new. Some of you have been in here for every single one of these post-game shows that I'm doing after every single Pacers playoff game. The final tonight, 130-121 in Game 2. Jalen Brunson got hurt early. OG Anunoby took over. But then in the third, OG got hurt. What is his status for the rest of the series? Tyrese got going early. Faded late, did the whole team. Where is TJ McConnell in crunch time? And can they get more out of Pascal Siakam? A lot to cover here on this live Pacers postgame show. That and more is what I plan to get into. First, let me just get a few thoughts for you here about what just transpired. Before I get into the comments section here, because I'm going to get to it. I want to get to every single one of you as long as it's not belligerent or outrageous or anything. Lots of things to talk about. Certainly officiating, but that was not the extent of it. This was a huge missed opportunity for this Indiana Pacers team, considering the circumstances. The fact that more Knicks players continue to get hurt. Jalen Brunson missed, I think, sat out 5 minutes in Game 1. And tonight in Game 2, he went out with like 3 minutes and 45 seconds left in the first quarter, didn't play in the second quarter, came back out for about 5 minutes just before the start of the second half for warm-ups, and then finished the game and finished with a team-high 29 points. And it was just a disappointing showing by this Indiana Pacers team. I go back to the maturity, to not taking advantage of the situation. There were some coaching aspects I'm curious about, mostly TJ McConnell. I don't care what your rotations have been. I don't care that your starters start the game. They don't need to finish the game. And if it was me, TJ McConnell has to be in there and not sitting the bench and watching for the second straight game as he did for the final 7 minutes. He's too impactful. He did such a good job on Jalen Brunson, at least probably better than any other Pacers out there. I'm going to check out the Second Spectrum stats on that here later on after this program, live program is over. On top of that, he was running the offense. He had it humming. He had 9 assists in 12 minutes in just the first half. He deserved the right to finish the game. And also, quite frankly, Obi Toppin did as well. He had 20 points, and it didn't feel that way. 7 of 10 from the field, 3 rebounds, 0 turnovers, so it's not like he messed up by any means. I wanted to see adjustments. The one we did see was in the final 5 minutes. We saw assistant coach Jenny Busick, who was ahead of the defense for the most part, was coaching up the guys and saying trap Brunson basically immediately once he was past half court. And so they did. And the first time, woof, did not work whatsoever, because what we saw there was Brunson pass out of it, sent it opposite corner where DiVincenzo knocked down one of his six three-pointers on the night. Had a pair of them in that fourth quarter. Pacers got to within two with about minute, or got to within two with 4 minutes left, got to within six with that 1 minute, 19-second mark where the double dribble incident happened. And I don't know how you change the call. It looked like a double dribble. It was called a double dribble. You had other officials clearly step in and say, hey, we need to change this a little bit, ultimately. But I just don't understand that situation. And I thought it was interesting. Rick is clearly changing his tone. I wrote before this game tonight, probably published at about 4 o'clock. If you haven't read it, I highly encourage you to go back and look at it because it was spot on. It was spot on. I'm proud about that. The fact that getting my read of this situation, the Pacers purposely didn't raise hell after game one in the officiating. They purposely were guarded in their comments. They purposely didn't call out the officials by name or anything like that. They owned it. They recognized, hey, we should have won that. But at the same time, there were some calls that went our way. You can't worry about that. We got to control the controllables. Rick was tired of that. He was tired of the physicality. He clearly was tired of some of the foul calls that went against them tonight. Calls they didn't get, some things that went against them. And so late in the game, I think really finally teed up by also the fact that his team wasn't winning the 50-50 balls. And then to put him over the top was that double dribble called on Hartenstein. And then it was reneged, basically. He had enough. He blew a fuse and went off on the officials, got one technical. 10 seconds later in game time, was called for another one, ejected. That was a message sent, in my opinion, to both the team, but especially to New York, to the NBA office, and to those officials about what he wanted to see. So that's something, obviously, I will be tracking here. Moving into Game 3 coming up Friday night at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. There still are tickets available, by the way. So if you have not purchased those, you can get in for like $79 plus fees. Again, a 130-129 Pacers loss to the Knicks. I appreciate you hanging with me as I had that kind of opening marks there as I tried to touch on many things. Halliburton still is not 100%. You can tell that, but he was better. We'll get into that. I'm sure somebody will ask about that. So now I want to go through the comments here on YouTube Live. I appreciate everyone joining in. Derby's first up. He says Turner and Nesmith, the two most inconsistent players on the entire team. They got to go. All right. We're getting a little harsh on some of these statements. Neither one is probably going to go in this offseason. Turner had a 29-point game in Series 1, which helped you win. Nesmith's one of your best defenders. And yes, you need to upgrade your defense. And Nesmith is more and best suited, by the way, as a seventh or eighth man. That's a separate conversation. But to blame them, to say you got to move them, that's a clear overreaction. Also says Carlisle is embarrassing, a little bit overreaction. I disagreed with some of the ways in which he used the rotation. I thought coaching could have improved there late in the game. I thought there was a couple times when they would have been better served using some of their timeouts. And I do understand the thought and the hesitation probably to not wanting to use some of those timeouts, right? And that's because this Knicks team doesn't use a big rotation. This Knicks team plays heavy minutes. Josh Hart, for the second straight game, played all 48 minutes. And by the way, I'm looking at notes and quotes and all this kind of stuff that I'm getting from fellow reporters that are at the game that are sending me stuff directly, which I definitely appreciate them looking out to me considering my unfortunate circumstances. Let's just say that. But there's got to be better coaching, I think, in the fourth quarter, both strategically and in particular with personnel. T.J. McConnell and Obi Toppin as well deserve the chance to finish that game. They were excellent throughout. Why not have them in there? That's the question I wanted to ask there late in the game. PJ says, Siakam, not a max player. The dude doesn't show up when the lights are bright. This game was a huge missed opportunity with Brunson missing time and OG. I definitely agree with the second part. You do absolutely need more from Siakam. I mean, tonight, 14 points. He did get the shots up, 7 of 18, 0 for 3 from three-point land. And what really concerns me, if I'm being honest here, and I am, 0 for 2 from the free throw line. Two extremely important free throws I think after Brunson, or no, after that DiVincenzo three-pointer, I believe. Siakam attacks, misses, gets his own rebound, is fouled, goes to the line, misses them both. That was after earlier in the corner where Isaiah Jackson missed a pair of free throws and Miles Turner missed one as well. And like the broadcast said, Pacers 0 for 5 to start the fourth quarter at the free throw line. They end up missing seven there. And you know you're not going to outshoot the Knicks or probably any team in this playoffs at the free throw line in terms of attempts. So you got to maximize them. And I don't understand why Siakam's struggling at the free throw line this season at like 68%. And in these playoffs, I think he's at like 42% last time I looked. He's going to be a max guy. I fully expect for that. It just depends on the years. Are you talking 3, 4, 5 years is what you're considering here? No doubt he needs to pick it up. Needs to be more assertive. I thought he was a little bit better here tonight, at least early on, but then he got away from it. I also wonder how much this roster is formed and designed for Tyrese Haliburton, and maybe that's a concern here, is you do need to have more of a balance in terms of your playing style and such, catering to other teams. And Pascal, the thing with him is he does not exactly fit and suit this team and their playing style, right? He's more of a methodical, slow it down, back to the basket, work you on the block. Where we know Tyrese and TJ and Nembhard, they want to run and get down the court, score as quickly as possible, those sorts of things. So there is a little bit of a fit, and somebody's going to have to adapt. One of the groups are going to have to adapt there. And also, you got to consider the circumstances. If not Siakam, who else? Pacers aren't going to get... aren't going to land a superstar in free agency. They're not even going to land an all-star. They haven't been shown to be able to do that. So it was good salary cap gymnastics, I guess is what I'm trying to say, in terms of making it work, getting your guy, and getting a guy that is an upgrade is better than you could get out in the free market. And so you got to pay for that. That's more of a conversation for the offseason. Simply can't let DiVincenzo beat you. If that's the case, go home and check out. He can be the part of the reason, but tonight DiVincenzo, Hartenstein were keys to the Knicks win. Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, I love those Villanova guys. Not only is a great story, which us reporters absolutely love, but on top of that, how they play together, how they communicate with each other, how they're on the same page, you can tell that chemistry. And to kind of go back to the previous question, that's something this Pacers team lacks. They don't have any playoff experience together. There's a lot of new pieces entering the fold. Remember, Obi Toppin's tremendous. It's just his first year with the Pacers. Siakam's mostly who I'm thinking about in this situation, though. Every Knicks player in double digits, 320 plus. Well, yeah, that's to be expected. Because the other way to look at it is their bench contributed 12 points. You're going to expect every Knicks player to nearly be in double digits. And for them to score, to win, rather, they're going to need several 20-point performances. So that's no surprise and can happen in a loss for the Knicks as well. PJ again says, tonight's game flat out took the wind out of my sails for this team. I hate to say it after following this team all season. This loss was crushing, mostly because it was so winnable. Yeah, I think that's well said, PJs. No question about that. A lot of frustration, especially considering how close this Pacers team was to winning one. And think about how they would have felt in game one. And what if they had the maturity, the accountability, the togetherness enough after getting game one? Brunson goes down. OG goes down. You hang tough. You grab another one. You're up 2-0 then. And that's not even a far stretch. That's handling your business and coming together and getting the job done. Yes, Halliburton's not 100%. We get that. He's probably not 90%. But he's playing through adversity and stepped up and accepted the challenge well, I thought, tonight. Late in the game, couple costly turnovers again. That happens. As a team, the team had 9. It was the third quarter that got them. And that was so surprising, guys, right? Considering how well this Pacers team has been in the third quarter throughout much of the season. That's their best quarter, and tonight doubled up. 36-18. You could talk about the 36 points they gave up. You could talk about the 18 points, failing to even score 20 in the quarter. The other three quarters, 36, 37, 30. That's what ultimately did them in. Now they came back as they've done so well. But this team doesn't, again, the word I like to use is maturity. They do not have it to close them out, finish the job, and get it done. They just don't. And so that's why we're in this current situation. Alex on here says Obi and TJ are playing like two max players. Nah, I think they're playing with hunger. Obi is in a contract year, so he will get paid this offseason. How much, we don't know. Again, he's a restricted free agent, so the Pacers have the right to match any offer that he receives out there, and they have his bird rights, so they can go over their salary cap to re-sign him. And that wouldn't necessarily have to go beyond the luxury tax. They can go just before that luxury tax threshold, and I don't know why they wouldn't, unless some team offers just something outrageous. And then TJ just does what he does, right? Plays hard, is always counted out. It was fun to see, I think, in that third quarter with John Starks on that left baseline in front of the Knicks bench, how they were just kind of yapping back and forth. And then TJ checked out what, unfortunately and wrongly, turned out to be the final time of the game with 7 minutes left, and he goes over and has a brief conversation with one of the fans sitting right behind the bench, because that's what he does. Keeps things lively. It keeps him fired up, and so that's the situation. He needed to finish the game. I think you could have been comfortable with him being out there and losing, but not. I don't think you should feel comfortable about him not playing the final 7 minutes and watching this game, this opportunity, go to waste with him on the bench. Big news, I'll be working with Autograph, the app where your fandom lies. The app gives diehard fans like you access to all the best sports content, fan challenges, and exclusive rewards like discounted tickets to the NBA playoffs, exclusive merchandise, and more. You can unlock these rewards by doing things you already do as a fan, like listening to this podcast, following news on your team, and sharing your favorite content. And here's a special offer leading up to Game 3. Two $24 tickets to Game 3 on Friday. The offer available to claim between 3 and 3:15 Eastern Time Thursday, May 9th, for just 20 coins. After the offer is closed, the winner will be randomly selected from the users who claimed, and then it'll be announced at 4:30 Eastern Time. Winners will be announced via the app and email, and will have 2 hours to purchase the tickets. Details in the app and a lot more. Use my code link.ag.fan/Scott Agnes. Again, that's link.ag.fan/Scott Agnes, and good luck. Back to the live chat here. Alex says, Hallie, meaning Tyrese and Pascal, are scaring me when the lights are bright. I think there's several things going on here. One, for Pascal in particular, there's the newness factor. There's the factor of this being Tyrese's team, not wanting to interfere, not wanting to disrupt, but trying to blend in. Yet at the same time, there needs to be Pascal fitting out and being the player that Chad Buchanan in this front office went out and got. That's why you go and acquire a player like his talents. And yes, he's soft-spoken. He's had to speak up more and needs to probably do more of that, quite frankly. But he needs to deliver more. I completely agree with that. I wouldn't be scared by this. Remember, this is Tyrese's first time being the guy. It's his first time in the playoffs. It's his first time winning since high school. He won a high school state title, didn't do much in college in terms of team success, didn't do anything in Sacramento. Last year, the Pacers missed out on the playoffs. He finished the year on injured reserve, which was appropriate because you were trying to lose games. Now the Pacers are out of the lottery. Now you want to win games. Now you want to see when the spotlight is on him. And there's a lot to be learned. He's just 24. These are the growing pains. And guys, this is exactly why Tyrese, the Pacers, coaching staff, the front office, wanted these opportunities. They wanted these minutes because you learn from them. Instead of Tyrese being at home tweeting the coach, texting the coaches rather, during the postseason, he's in them. He's getting that real world experience. This is not a world beating team. This is not a team that is going to reach the Eastern Conference Finals, or certainly not contend for a championship. So push that aside. I think you can acknowledge that the team should have won one of these two, maybe even both, quite frankly. Tyrese was not good. He was awful in game one, needed to step it up in game two, and did. And yet, there's still plenty of growth to go for Tyrese and this team as a whole. And that's what this postseason is about right now. A lot of negative comments here. Derby adds, Knicks are banged up and have been through the meat grinder. Pacers let them step on their throats. Just despicable. I agree with that comment. Pacers got outworked for the 50-50 balls. By the way, have I mentioned it? Another reason, TJ McConnell, your hustle guy, the guy that goes and gets things, he's disruptive. Guarded Brunson better than anyone. He needed to be out there. I was glad Stan Van Gundy joined my chorus in saying that on the TV broadcast. And I think the guys post-game on TNT did as well. Mention it after game one. I'll mention it again after game two. Alex says, Scott, we need an official chat. How do they not review the kicked ball but suddenly overturn the double dribble? No review. I was so happy to see Rick get ran. Kick balls are not reviewable, so you can't even look at it. No one can challenge that. You're not going to go look at it. So that's as simple as that. It looked like a kick ball. Miles Turner thought it was as well. I'll take his word for it. Camera was not obvious in what happened. That's not reviewable. And that's hard to discuss because keep in mind, the three officials are not watching the ball on the court. The three officials are kind of playing zone out there, meaning they're watching a spot. They're watching a section of the court. They're watching certain actions. That's why I think it's funny and sometimes weird when an official away across the court makes a call when a guy right in front of them didn't. They have their own land. And so one official must have been the only one that saw it. Now, in terms of the double dribble, no review, there was nothing to trigger the review. That's not something as reviewable, I don't believe, either. That's a situation where one official calls it and then the other two saw it differently and they want to have a conversation. Now, it's very rare and almost highly unusual that you see the officials have a conversation about this situation, this type of situation, and then change it. Even if they got it wrong, it's like a foul call where an official anticipated it, right? They blow the whistle, and then it's like, oh, crap. He blew that one, literally. It was not a foul, anticipated it. And then there was oftentimes a makeup. You can't just go and huddle up and be like, all right, never mind, no foul. Let's inadvertent whistle, take it side out. So I was very surprised to see that double dribble overturned and then ball staying with the Knicks. And then I would highly encourage you to read my story at Fieldhouse Files from before the game, how I believe the Pacers intentionally played it easy, played it low-key with the officials after game one. They didn't want to make it a big deal. But then Rick and company had enough, and they went off post-game. I'll have that story coming up tomorrow with video as well, where you can check that out. You can see their full post-game reactions on my YouTube page, by the way. Let's get further down on the line after the Pacers' 130-121 loss. I appreciate the comments in here. I'll quickly try to get through these and get back to maybe live. Main issue is Nembhard can't guard Brunson, and Rick goes back to Tyrese in the fourth. Tibbs predicted the trap and had New York ready. Yeah, good point. Yeah, I think so. Also, Brunson's a smart player and is on the same wavelength with DiVincenzo, but you could tell they were very prepared, and he didn't panic when that double team came. And you're right, Nembhard, he was solid, but he needs to be better than solid. Defensively, I wanted to see him pose more of a challenge, to make things more difficult. Where was that anger and the back-and-forth feistiness that he got with Bobby Portis in the first round? Maybe he needs to be disruptful and cause some chaos in the second round with Jalen Brunson, who's, you know, is he even 80% right now? Those are the little things. And the fact that Reggie Miller had to, late in the game, be like, hey, yeah, I'm good. Siakam and Achiuwa, yeah, I love, or no, it wasn't Achiuwa. Who was it? Hartenstein. Yeah, I love the back and forth. That's what you want to see. These are the playoffs. And I did laugh when Reggie goes, yeah, this isn't a date. This is the playoffs. But I totally understand his point and what he was trying to say out there. All right, what else we got here? Derby, no TJ, no Randall. Robinson. Yeah, we understand the circumstances. That's why the Pacers needed to win this. You got like three starters down for the Knicks right now. Who knows what OG looks like the rest of the series? Who knows what Brunson looks like? He was not very optimistic postgame in his postgame chat with Chris Haynes, my guy. I got to wonder if Brunson was plantar fascia. That's kind of what it looked like because he didn't tweak his ankle. He didn't roll it. But, man, he got in pain, and with 3:45 left in that first quarter, look back at the video I posted. He was like, take me out, take me out. I'm in pain. Went right back to the locker room and did not come out till more than an hour later, which was the second half. So if you're the Knicks, that's something you are definitely concerned about, and you will be watching closely here as you move into Game 3 as the series comes here to Indy. That game will be played Friday night at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. Ethan says, I'm very excited for Game 3 back home. It was great to see TJ and Rick fired up, but I'm hoping the fuel translates in some sort of focused play. Yeah, it better. Or like the fan behind Beverly reportedly, 1-2-3 Cancun. That's going to be the Pacers by the end of the weekend if they don't up their level of play, their focus, determination, and go win them some 50-50 balls. Because what else are you doing here? PJ says, I was really excited for tonight after being right there in game one. Then they came out flat, uninspired. Not sure if even home court can save them. Now, they haven't lost at home in over a month. I think it was like March 19th against the Cavaliers, if I remember correctly. I haven't in my series preview on fieldhousefiles.com. But you can't be dependent on home court. You have to use it to your advantage. But it's not a safety net. You're exactly right. You can't be reliant on it here. But it is something that can help you here moving forward. The injury concerns with the Knicks are obviously relevant. How does Halliburton's back respond to this game? I thought tonight was not a flat and uninspired performance. I think they just got outworked. I do personally wonder if maybe they took the Knicks lightly after OG went out and Brunson's 50%. I also think personnel had to change up. They went back to the starters, which was not the most effective unit. The Pacers' bench was. This is a difference right there. The Pacers' bench was really good, especially Obi Toppin and TJ McConnell, and yet those guys watched the end of the game on the bench. All right, what else we got here? Derby says, look, Pacers win their home games. Then you just need to win one more on the road. Yeah, it can be done, absolutely, but not at the current clip. What did you see tonight that gives you confidence that that can happen? You certainly expect to win one of those home games, but I think if you don't get two, then you're going to have a difficult chance winning this series. There's no doubt this Pacers team needs to win both, and just home court and home court. Appreciate once again everyone joining in. We've had a lot of people here join late on this post-game show just before midnight. If you joined late, you can watch the replay here on YouTube, or I will be posting it on my podcast. And on top of that, always, as always, be sure to check out my work at fieldhousefiles.com. Uncouth says, man, it sucks not to steal one in New York. Yep. Hart is 6'4 and out playing Turner. Hart, man, he's a guy you'd love on your team, right? Just goes out, does the dirty work. 19, 15, and 7 assists. Played all 48 minutes for the second straight game. No complaints, no arguments. He just flat out does the work. And much like TJ McConnell, if you bring it to the Pacers. Very productive player. And a lot of kudos I give to him for the way in which he's playing, both producing and enduring. Because he even had a game with 53 minutes, I think, in overtime against the 76ers in game 5. And as they hung in, even though they lost that game. But Josh Hart, man, just a talented player, just like Brunson, DiVincenzo. The thing you got to admire most about those guys, no surprise, Villanova, they're winners. They've won national championships. They've had success. They've been in these big moments. They've played on these nationally televised games. The crowd is phenomenal in New York. So many names that even you guys as more Pacer fans would absolutely be familiar with. I love the alumni section, basically, for the Knicks. And I hope the Pacers did that. I hope the alumni relations group worked and are making sure that there's a bunch of alums sitting courtside, in addition to the regulars like a Derek McKee, Eddie Gill right there. Now, let's see Rick Smits. Let's see a Dale Davis down there, right? Let's see Scott Pollard if he's healthy enough to be down there. I want to see some Pacers to alums out there and ready to respond. I thought that was a cool moment of these first two games at New York. Defense was shambolic. Definitely troubling, but yes, I agree. Why do you think Pascal has struggled lately, Luis asked. Confidence, injury, he's not performing. I think it's several things. I think, first of all, he's just not assertive enough. I have no reason to say why not, but I just think maybe he's just being passive right now. He's trying to pick his spots. He's wanting to allow for others to create when he's, again, got to remember there's a reason the Pacers not only traded for him, sent away 3 first-round picks, but they're prepared to offer him a monster contract. They believe in you. Take over in games. This is why they brought you in. Secondly, I would like to see him take advantage of that matchup. He had success against OG in game one. I want to see more of that in this game. We didn't see nearly as much. 7 of 18 from the field, 9 rebounds, 14 points for Pascal. I don't think it's a confidence thing. I don't think it's an injury thing by any means. I just think maybe mentally, and then also being the new guy on the team is not easy. I don't know what that feels like, but it's trying to blend in when he was born to stand out with his basketball play. Where was Ijax or Obi in crunch time? Grab a rebound, switch the lineups. I'm not going to Isaiah. Isaiah had four personal fouls. He would have grabbed a rebound, probably, although he only had four in his 14 minutes. I would have liked to see Obi Toppin if he just joined, and I would have liked to see TJ McConnell finish this game in DLF, no doubt. Does Rick Carlisle even get asked about McConnell? He did post-game. He said the first group deserved to finish the game, which I don't understand what that means. This is a playoff game. I don't care who deserved. I care which players individually needed to be out there to give this Pacers chance the best opportunity to steal this win and get it and finish the job. I'll look back more at the comments, and we'll be posting those on Fieldhouse Files tomorrow as well as this YouTube page. Lisa, welcome, Lisa. I think this is your first time on our post-game show. She says, best part of the game is my grandson may have learned a new word courtesy of Josh Hart. Yes. In case your grandson did not hear what the sellout crowd of 19,812 had to say at Madison Square Garden, Josh Hart came over and certainly made that one clear. I appreciate that because that's part of the old school rivalry. It is not a rivalry right now, to be sure. There aren't many rivalries in the NBA, but that took us back to those 90s, didn't it? That was a lot of fun to see a guy like Reggie hated inside that arena. That's what he wants. That's where Tyrese needs to get to be. He loves WWE. He loves the storylines, does Ty. Now he needs to go win his match. That's what we need to see. MK Sinks, there you are. 8 for 8 on our post-game show. He says it's just, or he or she, I guess I don't know. It's just frustrating to think the Pacers have to question the effort from the starters in the second round of the playoffs, but it was evident which team wanted it more, just deflating. Yep, couldn't agree more. We should not be talking about those things. We should be talking about execution, about being able to get stops, about making the right plays, and if it was a loss for this Pacers team, you're talking about missed shots. You're talking about missed free throws. You should not be talking about the effort, the 50-50 balls, and getting beat by a shorthanded Knicks team that is basically playing seven guys at this point, but really leaning heavily on their starting group. I've been saying for – oops, I lost it. Where is it? I think I have so many this thing keeps updating. I've been saying this for months, but the starting lineup that the Pacers used to close games, the current starting lineup is one of 11 in clutch situations. The only win was in overtime against the Bucks. I trust you. I don't know that to be a fact, but yeah, this team is also, by the way, does not have a lot of experience in closing time and clutch time and winning them. They lost in overtime, we remember, to the Chicago Bulls after that game happened. And really ever since the All-Star break and when Halliburton hasn't been at his best, this team has not been good in close games. Dayton Gray, welcome. Siakam was brought here to be the difference maker in these type of games. Since game two in Milwaukee, he has been underwhelming at best. Him not playing at an all-NBA level is the difference, period. I agree with most of that. That is not the difference in my mind, though. It was what we just talked about. It's the effort plays. It's not getting the offensive rebounds, or giving up offensive rebounds, I should say. It's not executing offensively. It's making costly turnovers there down the stretch. Now, with that said, yes, Siakam, he doesn't need to go off and be brilliant and score 35 points, although you would like to see a breakout game or two in a couple games. But first game, very mediocre from Pascal. This one, average. 14 points, 9 rebounds, 36 minutes, and he doesn't even have one of the tough defensive assignments. And actually, I haven't really touched on this, but since the trade, his defense has been the one thing that has been most surprising, and I mean that in a negative light, because his defense has not really been overwhelming. Like, I figured, thinking ahead to the playoffs, I was like, in a situation like they have with Jalen Brunson, I thought you'd maybe break things up and give a show a different look by putting Pascal on him. His length, his athleticism. No, they haven't tried that at all. You just don't see him doing much defensively. Zero steals. I guess one block shot. Even just two assists. You'd like to see him play make a little bit more. We'd lean more towards offense because he hasn't shown us much defensively. And I will say that's probably the biggest way I thought he would be different from what the Pacers had expected from when they acquired him. My last comment is like Nimhard, but Brunson is a bad matchup. Rick should have saw that last game. New rule from Steve. He says you can push a player in the back only if you keep doing it to keep yourself from falling down. All right. I hear you. Luis says, is there any hope in thinking that PG could come here? What? No. Why would you think that? I don't. Also, I think the focus should be right now on the playoffs and trying to see this Pacers team fight back, perhaps. I have no indication or reason to believe Paul George would want to come back to Indiana. I don't. And after watching this series, if you're Paul, why would you? You're not any closer to getting to the finals and winning a championship. If anything, if I'm Paul and not knowing salary cap and all that and how it would work for each team, I'm going to Miami. The toughness down there, you play with Jimmy Butler, you got a team that needs to be upgraded and a team that would want you. Also, that's where he met his wife, so there's that. You're living in Miami. It doesn't get much better than that. I'm going to leave that on the cutting room floor, though. Ethan says another bright spot tonight was Shep. I had the chance to see him play in college at Belmont, so he was on my radar. Super happy to see him, to see the Pacers pick him up. Been nothing but impressed. Yep, I completely agree. Not spending a ton of time on Shep, considering he was the kind of the eighth man in the rotation, but no doubt for a rookie to come in and knock down a couple big shots, in fact, 3 3-pointers, 11 points in 20 minutes, basically, and I thought it was really impressive. You're getting a lot out of him, and it's troubling, too, and disappointing that you're not able to get much out of Jairus Walker right now. And to go back to my conversation last game when fans were asking about him, a lot of that is because he's not ready. But it's a conundrum, right? He's not ready because he's not playing in the regular season. If you don't play in the regular season and experience things, you're not going to be able to contribute now. So that's where they're at right now. Derby, once again, says, I don't mean to be harsh on the Pacers with some of my first comments. I was very hot after losing. Takes me a while to cool down. All right, that's understandable. I appreciate your passion. I appreciate your interest in the team and your willingness to come on here for sure. And to acknowledge that. I just want to be as open and transparent in these conversations, but we don't need to rip and trade this guy and fire this guy. That's not going to get you anywhere. For example, this coaching staff, they just signed a contract extension before the season. And this is a team that you wanted to make the playoffs. You didn't expect to win a title. Very different expectations here than in Phoenix, than in Milwaukee. What else we got? A lot of comments. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get to all these before the end, but I'm going to try. Just for you guys. Christopher, the Pacers don't know how to rebound, guard the three-pointer, or make free throws. That's why you lose. Have you been watching Pacer games this season? They give up the fewest three-pointers of any team in the league. That's an area they strategically don't give up. They pack it in and prevent three-pointers. That's why they give up the most points, I believe, in the paint. I agree with that. But the first comment's not simply true. They need to be better rebounders. Yeah. Go tell Noah about the flood. That's been an issue for this Pacers franchise for a decade. Really, ever since I started covering this team in 2012. They're just not a good rebounding team. They just aren't. But Obi Toppin, would have liked to see him, man, finish the game, that energy, the pop, him enjoy this moment back at MSG, and the same goes for TJ McConnell. Have I said that enough? I feel like I've repeated that a lot. Probably too much, but it's true. Alex said, did I hear correctly that this team isn't getting to the Eastern Conference Finals? I don't disagree, but they're 4 wins away, and I wouldn't call that a stretch. I did say that based on just kind of what we're seeing out there. What have you seen tonight or two nights ago that has given you any excitement or belief that they can do it, that they can beat this team 4 times? They've let 2 slip away. So this Knicks team that's a tough team that plays every minute, that is fighting through adversity, that's without 3 players, might be without 4 or 5. They're not making excuses. They're not talking about Brunson being 50%, and yet he goes down, and what did he have in that 4th quarter? He was impressive despite his circumstances, right? He comes in and scores 14 points in that 4th quarter to dominate once again, and he clearly was not healthy. So, yeah, I did say that, and I'm not optimistic about this team advancing the Eastern Conference Finals. I said it before the series, and what I've seen in the first 2 games just reinforces that message. This team is not mature enough. They're not handling their business, and it felt like in a game like this, they resorted back to those the play when they face teams that are underwhelming. When they face the San Antonio Spurs or the Charlotte Hornets, they don't take them seriously. And to a comment earlier, they're not playing focused, determined basketball. That's what they got to get back to here. Daniel says two tough losses, but you got to remember this team has overachieved this season. I hate the Knicks. Come back home, try to take the next two, and hopefully have some clutch moments. I would disagree on the overachievement. I don't think they have. I think they've basically done what was expected. I did not expect them to win the first round series, except with Giannis and Dame being out. Then I did, and they did. If they lose this series, that's exactly what I expected. I think that is on brand because this Pacers team won, 10 more wins than last season. And I said going into the season, in the preseason, this should be a top six team in the Eastern Conference. They should reach the playoffs without no doubt, without needing the play-in. Then you acquire Pascal Siakam, and to me, that changes your timeline. Now, giving away Buddy Hield to try to make him happy and to move on from that situation definitely hurt you. You could use Buddy Hield right now, both of his shooting, his screening, him just being a decoy out there. There's no doubt that's something you're badly missing right now, and you got worse because of it. And that's a situation from a front office standpoint. How do you balance wanting to take care of a player, do right by him, but also looking out for yourself? And trading Buddy Hield and bringing on Doug McDermott was not a net positive for the Pacers. Doug McDermott's not even getting an in right now. And quite frankly, that trade, acquiring Doug, was almost an insurance policy rather than an upgrade or making a difference, because I like Doug, but he just hasn't done much this season. It didn't help that he had that calf injury that kept him out, I think, like 10 to 12 games. But right now in the postseason, Buddy Hield would absolutely be playing, and Doug is not. But to the point of, I think, that whole conversation where I started is I think this team has absolutely met its goal. It is on par. It is not overachieved. If they win the series, hands down, they overachieved, and anything else is gravy. You're playing with house money. Right now, I think they're even and deciding, should they call it a night and go back upstairs, or do they want to double down with what they're doing right now, to use an analogy right there. Dope vegan, let's just go with that. Why is TJ getting pulled? This was on coach. Yeah, I don't understand that. I've said that throughout this live chat. Do not understand that. That's a huge punch, you say. And the Knicks came back and took it. Yep. You finished with the starters who were outplayed for much of the night by the Knicks starters. The reserves were your best. Some of the reserves were your best minutes. They deserved, I think, at least a few of them to finish the game. Chris Burton with his first comment tonight. Really thought we were going to get that one. Got to regroup, protect home court. One game at a time. I honestly believe that we, meaning the Pacers, can still win this series. I think the best case scenario for the Pacers is the health situation. They have the depth. Meanwhile, the Knicks, Mitchell Robinson, Bogey, and Julius Randle out for the series. We don't know Brunson's status. And OG, I mean, hamstrings are awful. We saw what happened with Tyrese, didn't we? Where he missed 10 games, let's say. I'm very curious. I hope the best for OG, because I want to see the best players play. I don't want to see stars sit. But by the looks of it, OG immediately pulled up, barely even got the layup off, went straight back to the locker room, was immediately ruled out for the game. To me, that means it's not just a minor injury. Maybe it's at minimum a grade one sprain, and that would take him out essentially for this series. I hope not, though, but that's why you should be encouraged if you're the Pacers. You've been in every game. This game had 11 lead changes. It had 8 ties. Last game, no team led by double digits. Tonight, no one team led by more than 12, as both teams did. There's a lot to be optimistic and like, yet at the same time, there's so much that leaves a lot to be desired. So disappointing, I believe. Big task at hand. The alumni will only be 2 people. I hope not. They got to be better than that. You're not probably going to get Reggie. He's going to be out west for the Minnesota-Denver series, which could end in a sweep, I guess. But there are several alums in town. From ABA on to the NBA, I hope there's a good collection of 8 to 10 alums. Maybe Ron Artest will be back. He was at the last series, right? How does Hart get away from push-offs from behind when the Pacers had the ball twice? First tie, then Neesmith. Yeah, I don't know. I think that's the argument that Rick Carlisle made postgame and was upset about, and clearly stated his message by getting not one, but two technicals in the final 40 seconds, being tossed, and then coming out postgame and having to say what he said there about small markets should be given an opportunity to compete there to get a fair whistle and such. Ron says, hopefully there will be more Pacer legends revving up before the tip. Yeah, you would hope so. I hope it's not just someone random IndyCar related right now. No, you need to, I think it'd be great if those are a couple of Pacers alums. I would go with Roy Hibbert on Friday. I don't know if he's coming to town. I think that would be fantastic, especially because it'll be the first Pacers home game against the Knicks in the playoffs since that block by Roy Hibbert. That would be my vote if he will be in town. And if you're Herb Simon, you take care of it. Here's $1,000. Buy a first-class ticket. Make sure you're at the game, and I'm putting him courtside. I'm putting Ron Artest. I'm putting Roy Hibbert. I'm putting Lance. I'm putting those guys right under the basket by the Knicks bench. Anything you can do to disrupt people, right? All right, take a couple more questions here on this post-game show as we're well past midnight. If you haven't done so, read my column at the buzzer about this game. A couple stats of note, including Josh Hart playing all 96 minutes in the series so far. Mighty impressive. What else we got? I like Shep, but looks like a substitute teacher. I see him in a blazer and a briefcase. Yeah, and you're talking about the mustache as well, probably, right? Ethan says, I think a free throw clinic is warranted for Thursday's practice, or shoot around at the middle. At the minimum, the Pacers are leaving so many free points on the line. Absolutely. But if you don't think the Pacers work on their free throws, or any team for that matter, you're wrong, because we often see that. In fact, when we're allowed in after practice, that's really all we're allowed to see. It's very different than fever practice, which I appreciate right now. I've been covering those. It's difficult covering both teams at one time right now, and I'll be at the field house again tomorrow night for Caitlin Clark's preseason finale, her debut, I guess, at Gainbridge Fieldhouse, although we can save the debut talk till next week when they return home. I will be in Connecticut, by the way, for the Caitlin Clark debut in the WNBA. That should be fun next Tuesday night. And I already read that one. But, yeah, free throws got to improve. That blame goes all around. I give credit to Tyrese. Didn't get to the free throw line in game one. Got there about 4 minutes in, I think, in this one. Finished 5 of 6. Obi Toppin 4 of 5, but man, Isaiah Jackson 1 for 3. That hurts. Miles 0 for 1. Pascal 0 for 2. And those three players I mentioned, all that was in the fourth quarter. That hurts even more. This series is far from over. Chris adds, Hart and DiVincenzo won't be feeding off the home crowd. I think Rick changes that closing lineup. TJ for Neesmith. That's what I wanted to see tonight. Did not see that, though. I don't know. Maybe he's stuck in his ways, or maybe the coaching staff will make the tweak. I don't think there's any guarantee either way. I just know I was texting a national reporter during this game and said what I thought would happen, and that's exactly what happened. You pulled TJ. You went back to Ty, and you stuck with it, even though TJ needed to be out there. Luis adds, for as smart a player as Tyrese is, why is he so low IQ on defense, low effort on it? I think it's more low effort. I think it's more star players focusing on their offensive end. I think it's managing your workload. And it's a want-to factor more than anything. That's what Paul George taught me all the way back in 2010. He was not a defender. He didn't care about defense. But remember, Jim O'Brien wouldn't play him, so he learned to play defense. Then he learned to be an elite defender. And now he's one of the best two-way defenders there is. So Ty could learn to be a better defender, I think. He's got the look, he's got the measurables. He's like 6'4". He's got the wingspan. He's got the length. He's got the basketball IQ. I think it's a want-to, and clearly something else that goes into it as well. Tell the truth. Welcome back. The Pacers play soft. The Knicks do not. Tyrese plays soft. Brunson does not. I disagree with that last part a little bit, although not in the first game. Pacers aren't a soft team, but man, they didn't deliver when it mattered most. The Knicks are tough-nosed, physical. They just play a different brand of basketball. Pacers are more finesse, more stylistic. We're not really seeing those alley-oops. We're not really seeing those fast-break dunks. The Pacers only with 10 fast-break points. They did outscore the Knicks in this one from fast-break, but just by 1 point. That's it. Got to be more than that. You need to dominate that category, much like the Knicks did. The rebounding number, plus 10, 44 to 34. Derby says, I wonder, the last time the Knicks got shellacked by 20 or more. I think they're due. Yeah, we'll see about that. I don't know why you'd expect to see that, given how hard the Knicks play, how they don't give up, how they fight, how they climb back, and they do so well. Steve, appreciate the endorsements. He just says, thanks for the show. You betcha. I've been enjoying doing these after every single Pacers playoff game. It's been a lot of fun and having these conversations with you fans out there and discussing what you guys care about most during these playoffs. Now, Shoma says the only time Pascal hasn't performed in the playoffs well was in the bubble. He's not being maximized defensively or offensively, so I'm not surprised he's struggling. Yeah, that's probably fair, too. There's probably better ways in which the coaching staff can get him involved or Tyrese can call his number. That's something I thought maybe they'd draw up a little bit more. I know there's so much of a free-flowing offense, but also what would it look like to draw up something for Pascal three plays in a row, throw it to him in the post a couple times? I'd like to see that. Also notable, Miles Turner didn't hit a three-pointer, 0 for 2. You'd like to see him knock down two of those each game. Doesn't need to be five at all. But if he knocks down a couple of threes, really outside of Ben Shepherd and Tyrese Haliburton, this team did not shoot well from beyond the arc. A couple more questions here. Steve says, good night. Chris says, Tyrese has the IQ, 7 steals in these 2 games. Yeah, he had 3 tonight, no doubt. I think a lot of times he tries to jump the pass. He tries to get that quick steal and then throw it ahead. He plays angles. Sometimes it's a little bit more riskier than they would like, and I think that's the same is true for Jairus Walker as well. Another fan says, hopefully Pacer fans buy the rest of the tickets because we saw what Knicks fans can and will certainly do to occupy Gainbridge Fieldhouse. Yeah, I totally agree. After we saw what 76ers fans were having to put up with because of Knicks fans. And what's crazy, and I wrote about this on the site or listed it, I think, in my series preview, is that you can buy a flight here, pay for a hotel, and more cheaper than you can just buy a ticket to a Knicks game at MSG. So I do expect Knicks fans to make the trip, especially being a long weekend or, you know, weekend here with games Friday and then Sunday afternoon. Man, if you're a Knicks fan, this is perfect. You come in Friday afternoon, you're out by Sunday night, and be in New York. There's several direct flight options with several different of the airlines. Too easy, I think, if you have money, can afford it, and want to make the trip here to Indy. And I think there's more of the enticement given the fact that the Knicks have already won the first 2 games. Maybe they close it out in 4 games. I don't think so, but if you're a fan, that's what you're considering and saying, yeah, I don't want to miss that. I want to see them make it back to the Eastern Conference Finals and be present for it. So there are tickets still available, and I'm not talking resale. I'm talking regular ones directly from the Pacers. And by the way, here is a pro tip. If you live downtown or nearby, it might be worth driving to the box office to buy your ticket because you don't pay those stupid, ridiculous Ticketmaster fees. I do the same thing for the concerts I go to. Just a pro tip for you. Same thing works at Lucas Oil Stadium if you go to concerts or games there. Don't avoid that Ticketmaster fee by going directly to the box office when it is open. For his atrocious free throw shooting, Siakam has to give us, meaning the Pacers, a discount this summer. If you're him, why would you give him a discount? Somebody's going to pay you, and that's the circumstances the Pacers are dealing with. Last question here. How does Rick stick with the premeditated rotation in the playoffs versus going with what's working? I don't know. Tell the truth, that's what I want to see as well. I always am a big believer, especially for a team that doesn't have the late-game chemistry or the playoff experience. This is a different conversation if we're the 2014 group, right? And that team has played hundreds, if not thousands of minutes in late-game clutch winning time. And they've closed out games, and they've faced big opponents, and they've reached the Eastern Conference Finals. I don't think Carlisle and the coaching staff owes it to any of the players on the roster, starters included, for them to start to finish games. They didn't hesitate making changes to the starting lineup several times throughout the year. I think they've used like 15 different starting lineups at least. Kristen Ari always keeps that stat updated. But closing the game, TJ McConnell's got to be out there. And I think that's probably the best way to end this live stream. The way in which TJ's playing, he deserved to finish the game, and probably Obi Toppin did as well. Well done by both of those players. Toppin, 20 points, 3 rebounds, 7 of 10 shooting. High energy guy. TJ McConnell, first career double-double in the postseason. 10 points, 12 rebounds, 5 of 9 shooting. His most memorable playoff game that he's had to date. That will wrap up this postgame show. Derby, you're welcome. Thanks for staying up with me and joining me here on this live postgame show. The Knicks take a 2-0 series lead on the Pacers after tonight's 130-121 win over the Pacers in front of a sellout crowd of 19,812. I appreciate everyone joining in on this live chat, and I'll be back with you on Friday following Game 3 right here on YouTube. In the meantime, continue to read my work at Fieldhouse Files of both Pacers, Fever, and Caitlin Clark coverage. That wraps up tonight's live chat, and I'll talk to you again soon.